Invite, so check it out. We're back with yet another mini-sode. And I don't intend to do this many back-to-back-to-back. I'm trying to spread the mini-episodes apart more from each other, but I've been a little backed up with my scheduling of guests. I've got four really great guests and really great topics scheduled for the next several weeks. But yeah, I mean, things just with the COVID and the quarantine and all that stuff have really got my schedule all out of whack and just whatever. It's another mini-sode, and it's all good. It's here. Here's the show. We're doing the show, and it gives me an opportunity to talk about something that I've been thinking a lot about lately and something I've been talking to a lot of people about lately, because it was like this epiphany that I had, this realization that I had. And I don't know if I stumbled upon this. I probably didn't. There's probably people who are way smarter than me who are already aware of this or who have already written about this, and I just need to do some Googling and see about it. But I had this idea occur to me that a key way that people differ in the way that they reason and the way that they come to decisions about how they're going to behave and how they're going to vote and how they're going to align themselves politically, and this is generalized, of course. I'm going to be talking about ways that people differ on the political left and political right, specifically in America. So obviously I'm going to be generalizing here, but a key way that I've been noticing that people on the right differ from people on the left is people on the right tend to reason and consider their sticking points and their voting points and the points of how they're going to behave publicly based on the idea of slippery slopes. And people on the left tend to vote and consider their talking points and their sticking points and their points of public discourse based on clear and present issues that are already occurring. So let me expound on that. What do I mean by slippery slopes versus clear and present issues? Essentially, I see this with everything. When I talk about slippery slopes, what I mean is the reason why a person on the right will oppose a certain idea that's put forward by someone in a more socially progressive camp, for lack of a better term, is generally because they see what's being proposed as a gateway to further harm later on down the road. It's a slippery slope to this. We can't have gay marriage because that's a slippery slope to people wanting to marry their pets. And while that sounds insane and like I'm being ridiculous, that's not a ridiculous representation of what people truly were saying when we were having the marriage debate in this country. People were saying that. They were saying, well, what's next? They're going to want to marry their pets. They're going to want, basically, marriage means nothing now. We're just getting rid of the idea of marriage, we're totally just redefining what words mean now. It was all slippery slope fallacies that were leading to people not supporting gay marriage being legalized. And you see this with everything. We want increased gun laws, make it harder for people to register and license weapons and ban assault rifles and stuff like that. People don't want to support this, even though we keep having issues with, mass shootings and gun violence in America. People don't want to support this because they see it as a slippery slope. Yeah, but if I allow you to make it harder than it already is to get a gun, then eventually what you're actually going to do is come for all of my guns and take them all and then wage a war against me and I won't have anything to defend myself with. It's this slippery slope fear of if I give on this one little thing, it's actually going to wind up here with something way, way, way worse. So I gotta make my sticking point at the initial point so I don't allow the slippery slope to begin. And you can almost sort of understand that. You can understand how people would look at, you know, trends that happen in history or that happen in other countries and see how, hey, that policy that you're proposing looks like the beginnings of what happened over here in this scenario or what happened at this period in history. And we don't want that to happen again, so we're just going to nip it in the bud here on the outset. You see smart, intelligent people making arguments like this. Like, I think I catch some flack for this from some people, but I'm something of a Jordan Peterson fan. I think that he's a well-meaning, well-spoken, well-considered thinker. But I don't agree with him on everything, on nearly everything. And one of the things that he got famous for was for opposing this bill in Canada that was trying to mandate that people had to use preferred pronouns of trans and non-binary people. And he saw it as a slippery slope to controlled speech and Marxist authoritarian law. And he talks about it frequently that he doesn't think that he's being hyperbolic or at all absurd when he's saying this, that he thinks it's already occurring, that people are losing their jobs for not using the preferred speech of other people, and they're losing their careers and they're facing public ridicule and public shaming if they don't use the correct speech. So I think he very genuinely and truthfully believes that this legislation was a slippery slope bill that was going to lead to further and further increased authoritarian or totalitarian in his mind, possibly, laws that would control the way people can think and ultimately speak and ultimately control the way that they can think. And the problem with this is, again, it's like you can see how a smart man like Peterson could come to that conclusion. The problem that I have with this is when he's citing examples in history of how controlled speech has not worked and how it has always led to power grabs by authoritarian regimes, he's talking about examples where government stepped in and said, hey, you're not allowed to publish articles in the newspaper that are critical of such and such leaders, or you're not allowed to speak out against such and such idea. He's talking about really specific, nefarious moves that were made by governments in a direct attempt to implement authoritarian and, kind of controlling measures so that they could, if they could stop the criticism of the government and its policies, and if they could arrest people for publicly saying anything that was critical of their ideas, they could increase their control and their dominance over the society that they were running. So he's referencing that, and he's ascribing that same nefarious intent to people who are trying to seek for increased safety and dignity for trans and non-binary folks at work and at school and at places where they have to be. He's conflating those two things. And I think you have to look at the specific circumstances of each event, which is something he should understand. Because Peterson's always talking about how you have to look at the specific circumstances of each individual thing and that things are multifactorial and things are not so easily boiled down to just one idea. And then it's funny because he falls victim to this same fallacy of just going, oh, well, it happened here like this. So clearly, when you say that I have to use a person's preferred pronouns, you're also doing that same nefarious thing of slowly trying to gain absolute control over my ability to speak and think freely. And I think the key difference in that specific instance is the intent, because is the intent of the Canadian government in that instance to slowly begin to usurp control over people's linguistic freedom and thereby increase their stranglehold on society? And what is the end goal here? To force everyone to what? You know, what is the nefarious goal that Jordan Peterson is afraid of in this slippery slope fallacy? Or is the goal of the Canadian government in this instance, just what I said earlier, is it just to try to increase safety and dignity and equality for people who don't identify as the gender assignment that they were born with? You know, I mean, doesn't it seem like it's more reasonable that it's just the second one, that it's not actually this secret nefarious power grab, but it really is just people trying to deal with a current, clear, and present issue? The issue being that trans people are being murdered in alarming numbers, that trans and non-binary people struggle so much with representation and with just common decency and dignity in the workplace, at school, at places where they have to be in order to function in society, but they are not, they're just constantly denied their basic human dignity. And a law like this could literally just be done in the purest sense of altruism, just to try to help these people out. And that's all it is. And it really isn't a secret, nefarious, slippery slope law. You know? And again, we see this everywhere. And this is why I'm talking about this. You know, we see this with people who think that if we, that when we talk about defunding the police and putting the money into new community organizations that would exist for multiple reasons, for like, you know, if there's a person who's drunk asleep in their car, instead of calling 911 and having armed police officers show up to deal with it, you call a different number and it's people who are trained professionals in that specific scenario who show up and they offer that person a ride home, or they check to see if that person's okay. And there's no reason that there needs to be a violent interaction between heavily armed police officers and this intoxicated person. But when they hear us proposing, or when they hear ideas proposed like that, they think that what's actually going on is it's a nefarious way to go, we're trying to get rid of police and trying to get rid of law enforcement so that we can break all the laws and have chaos. That's what's actually going on, is the criminals of society are trying to convince everyone that they've got this really great idea to create these community outreach programs that will increase public safety. But what it really is it's all the people who just want to be able to rob stores and sell drugs and kidnap little kids. They're actually the ones pushing this legislation because they just want to be able to commit crimes without repercussions. It's a slippery slope idea of they're sneaking in this sneaky, underhanded legislation and calling it, dressing it up like it's something really nice and something that's really progressive and really altruistic, but secretly it's actually really bad. And it's a slippery slope to lawlessness and chaos, and that's why we can't support it. And ultimately, this is what we're seeing going on with the masks. There is a clear and present issue. Just like with the police, it's like there's a clear and present issue of police officers killing unarmed black people and just unarmed people in general, just killing people on tape, on video, people who don't deserve to be killed over and over and over again and not being held accountable for it. And so people are going, hey, we need to deal with this very clear problem, this issue that we have let stand for far too long. We need to deal with it. We need to come up with a solution for this current issue, this thing that is currently happening, not this thing that might happen if this occur, not this thing that could potentially happen if we allow this guy to get elected and then he says this thing that is currently happening, we're trying to come up with solutions for. So that's the left. The left is going, here's what's actually currently happening. Here's what our concern is currently. And here is how we're going to try to address that concern. And the right thinks that everything that the left comes up with to address current issues is actually secretly, here's our plan 20 or 30 years down the road, and here's how we're going to begin to implement that plan. We're going to come up with a policy that says we're concerned about such and such issue, and then it's going to open the door for us to do this, then this, then this, then this. And before you know it, we'll have taken over the world and everyone will be trans and everyone will be getting abortions and everyone will be getting gay married and in whatever church they want to get gay married in. And that'll be our plan to take over the world. That's honestly legitimately how people on the political right think. And we see this with the masks, even with something as basic as the clear present danger and issue of a global pandemic. It is happening. It has been happening for several months now. Close to 500,000 people are dead across the world in just a few short months from this highly contagious disease. The U.S. has crazy numbers of infections, crazy numbers of deaths. And there are people who think that what's actually being said when a government mandates that you wear a mask and socially distance and stay 6 feet apart from your neighbors is this idea of a slippery slope of, if I give the government an inch of my liberty on this, they're going to take it all. Pretty soon, they're going to be saying, telling me how I need to dress. They're going to be telling me certain hours of the day that I'm allowed to be outside of my house and certain hours that I'm not. And then who knows? Maybe they'll just say, your house is mine now. We own your house. And they're going to move me to a different neighborhood with other people who think like I do. And they'll control how much money we can make. And this is truly the thought spiral that people go through when they go through this slippery slope fallacy is, if I allow the government to tell me I have to wear a mask, then I'm opening the door to allow them to tell me I have to do whatever they say all the time. They really don't think that all that's being asked is, hey, look, there's a global pandemic and we're trying to control this current issue. And the way we're trying to do it is keeping distant from our neighbors and wearing masks when we're in public. And if you can do that, we'd really appreciate it. They're certain that it's actually something more nefarious. And I think I know why. I think I know why they think this. It's the same reason why Donald Trump thinks it's totally okay to lie and cheat every time he opens his mouth or does anything. There's a book called Commander in Cheat that was written about from the perspective of several people who have golfed with Donald Trump over the years. And it's basically just a collection of stories about how he's a notorious cheater on the golf course. And one of the stories apparently goes that this guy was doing a charity tournament with Donald Trump, and they were about to tee off, and he pointed at the twosome ahead of them, and he said, hey, see those guys up there? They're cheaters. But it's okay, because we're going to cheat too, all right? I expect you to cheat because they're cheating, and that's just how the game's played. And this was revealing about his psychology, because it kind of said, you know, it is possible that he behaves the way he does because he genuinely believes that that's how everyone in the world behaves. He thinks it's totally okay to lie and cheat because he figures, I'm not the only one lying and cheating. Everyone is lying and cheating. So it's fine if I do it too. That's just evening the playing field out. And I think that this is why, and again, I'm speaking in generalities here when I'm talking about right and left, but I think that this is why people on the right are so susceptible to slippery slope fallacies. And it's because the way that people on the right implement policy is in that nefarious way of dressing it up as something else, but really meaning something more icky. They'll say that they're fighting for religious freedom when really what they're fighting for is gay people make me kind of feel gross, and I want the freedom to be a bigot and say that they can't come into my establishment. But I want to just say it's just my religion. It's my deeply held beliefs, and I just want the freedom to practice my beliefs in the way that I choose. They can't just come out and say, hey, look, I don't like gay people. I don't like trans people. I don't like queer folks. I don't like black folks. I don't like people who are different than me, and I don't want them in my store. They can't come out and say that. So what they say is, I'm an upstanding Christian, and I want the freedom to practice my beliefs as I see fit in this country that was founded on religious freedom. Knowing full well that that's not actually what they want. And since this is the way that they approach issues. They figure that's the way that everyone approaches issues. They figure that when people on the left say, hey, look, like, we've got a problem with healthcare in this country. Like, we've got a problem with too many people not being able to afford healthcare while the top 1% of the country hoards all the wealth. What they think it's some nefarious, like, what are you actually saying? They think that there's some nefarious doublespeak going on where really what you're saying is that you want a class war and you want to overturn the tables and blow up, you know, capitalism and American democracy and just give all the rich people's money to all the poor people and nobody works for it. And it's just, yeah, I mean, you know, and it's like, hey, look, while I'm totally for taking as much money from the top 1% as we can possibly get and giving it to everyone else, because why not? They have more than enough to go around. It's interesting to me, this idea that whenever someone on the left says, hey, we got a problem with gun violence in America, we got to do something about that. We got a problem with police brutality. We got a problem with racism. We got a problem with homophobia, with transphobia. We got a problem with representation and the way that people are represented in the media, and also just with people not receiving their basic dignity in the workplace and just out in society in general. We got to address these issues of social inequity. And when people are talking about that, they think that you're talking about something else because that's usually how they're functioning. They literally came up with a slogan called pro-life in opposition to pro-choice, when that's not what they meant at all, because they don't actually give a shit about the baby's life once the baby's born. They don't care if it goes to an orphanage or goes through the foster care system for the first 15, 16, 17, 18, 20 years of its life. They don't care. They just care that they win that ideological battleground. They came up with the slogan All Lives Matter to oppose the slogan Black Lives Matter, but they don't actually mean All Lives Matter, because if they did, then they would fucking agree that Black Lives Matter. I mean, can you imagine the insanity of coming up? You don't want to support the movement that says Black Lives Matter and we want to care about the black people who are being murdered in the streets. And you're upset about that movement because you probably have some deep-seated racism that you need to confront. But instead of just being honest about it and saying, I don't think black lives do matter, and I kind of hate Colin Kaepernick for kneeling and disrespecting my flag. Instead of just being honest about it, you say something as intellectually dishonest as all lives matter to oppose the idea that black lives matter. If you actually thought that all lives matter, then you wouldn't have a problem with the slogan Black Lives Matter. But again, this is how these people operate. And they operate this way because they assume that's how everyone operates. Ben Shapiro, I'm convinced Ben Shapiro doesn't actually think half the shit he says. I'm convinced, like straight up, I don't even care if he hears this. I'm convinced the guy doesn't actually like really care about his religious beliefs, but it is advantageous for him to appear as a devout Jew who always wears his yarmulke, because then when people can accuse him of being racist, he can go, yeah, but I'm wearing a yarmulke. Well, how would I be racist or like a white supremacist if I'm wearing a yarmulke? It's politically advantageous for him to align with a religion and a people who have been historically maligned and ostracized. And then, under that kind of persona, he can say whatever he wants about how the black community needs to take more responsibility for fixing their own problems, and how, you know, fatherlessness in black households isn't white people's fault, and how, you know, just all this racist, ignorant stuff that Ben Shapiro is constantly saying. And then if anyone calls him racist, he can go, oh, yeah, nice try. Did you see the yarmulke, pal? And again, just like Trump, I think that the reason these people do this is because they think it's what everyone's doing. So, yeah, slippery slopes. I get it. You know, it's not that slippery slopes are always wrong. you might really be identifying a thing that you go, hey, if we allow this to happen, it could lead to this, 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 and this, you know? Even not wanting Donald Trump to be elected in 2016, it's like, yeah, that's, I mean, it's not so much a slippery slope as it is, again, a clear and present danger. It's not like this guy might open the door for future racists and pussy-grabbing misogynists. It's this guy is openly racist and misogynist and has been his entire life. We've got video on this guy saying racist and misogynist and homophobic things going back 40 years, and he's still saying it out in the open. It's not a I think this guy is secretly this thing. It's this guy is openly and proudly this thing. So anyway, yeah, I don't know if I came on to something novel there with that idea, or if it's something that I'm just now figuring out, but I thought it was interesting. Hey, it's a mini-sode, so if you stuck around this long, I got a little treat for you. I've got a single coming out on Friday. It's called Beautiful Things. No, Beautiful Things is the name of the album. The single is called Sweet Rejection. The album and the single were mixed and mastered by our good friend Chrissy Bear over at Marmalade Music, because I use Marmalade Music for everything. You can use Marmalade Music. You can go to marmalademusicslc.com, tell them that you listen to this show, take 20% off of your project. It's really worth it and easy. And, you know, like I do so often, I figured I'd just let you hear the single. How's that, huh? I'm just going to let you hear it before anyone else hears it. 2 days before, to be exact. This will be out streaming everywhere on Friday, and you get to hear it right now. This song is, it's the last song that I wrote for the album. I felt like the album might have been done, but I was like missing one key thing. I wanted one more singer-songwriter-y, folksy song, because that felt more like my roots. There's a lot of different sonic aesthetics on this album, and there's a lot of things that I've never done before, and it's very big, and I kind of threw the kitchen sink at a lot of the songs, and I wanted one more song that was a little bit more tied to my roots, and this was that song. I wrote this song, and it really felt right and felt like it fit, and so much so that we decided to make it the last single that we were going to release before the release of the album. So this is the final single before the album comes out in a couple months, and I hope you enjoy it, and I also want to hear from you about what you think about what I just said. Do you agree with me, or do you think I'm full of shit? Yeah, let me know. You can DM me on the People Pleaser Instagram, at PeoplePleaser_podcast. You can hear more of my music by looking up Austin Archer on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or by going to austin-archer.com. Okay, enjoy this new single, Sweet Rejection, from my upcoming album, Beautiful Things. Okay, bye-bye.
Call it bad luck, call it self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess. Call it a shame, call it good old-fashioned lack of talent, I could really not care less. Chris says it ain't happened, cause I'm not playing enough show. Whether he is right or not, I don't believe that anybody really knows. Oh, sweet rejection, you might be my oldest friend. How can one so eloquent still retain such thin skin? There goes another year, waiting for the tide to come in. You get old, thinking that the best is yet to come. You forget, you're not in control of when you're done. Could be from a street bullet from a 5 blocks away.
You're dreaming about tomorrow, thinking what you should have done yesterday or no.
Making it all up as I go.